There are a few miracles in the Bible that transcend the Christian religion. And by that, I mean miracles that have become part of popular culture and really detached in popular culture from their original context. I would say Moses parting the Red Sea is one of those. Jesus walking on water is another. And then Jesus turning water into wine is right up there in the top three in that category. Often it's used as a joke, like in this meme. Other times, turning water into wine is used to refer to doing the impossible or wishing that we could do something impossible. It's not like I can turn water into wine or something. And the very fact that it has seeped into popular culture in this way indicates to me that it strikes some kind of chord deep within us. It speaks to a deep human yearning to move from marveling at nature's power to wielding it ourselves, from seeing what nature can do to being able to do it ourselves. For centuries, humans attempted to turn gold or to create gold out of other common elements. This was called alchemy. And alchemy actually goes way back to ancient Egypt and then up into the Middle Ages. In our modern day, we don't try that, but it could be said that our attempt to create general artificial intelligence out of computer chips made of silicone and metal is a different kind of alchemy that we're trying today. We're trying to turn water into wine. That's why the idea of turning water into wine strikes such a chord with us. It's because we see nature doing something that it just does all the time. Grapes take water and soil and sunlight and turn them into grape juice. And then the yeast starts to process of fermenting the sugars in the grape juice and turning it into alcohol, and that creates the wine. And for some reason, it's not enough for us to just receive this gift from Mother Earth with gratitude and with reverence. Instead, we want to control nature. We want that power for ourselves. And so this story is a story of a person who was able to harness that power. Jesus, with barely a word, turns a massive amount of water into a massive amount of wine. Jesus controls the power of nature. But here's where we need to pause as interpreters of the Bible. Because the Gospels, and the Gospel of John in particular, are not telling a literal story about a specific historical person who wielded the power of Mother Nature. The message is not the historical Jesus had amazing and miraculous powers, although many Christians read it exactly that way, and I bet most of us have been trained to read the story that way. But we also know that just about everything in John's gospel is a symbol for something else, some symbol for something deeper. And John tells us that in various places. The character of Jesus in this story is a symbol for the power that the early Christians experienced together after the death of Jesus. When they came together and they passed on his teachings and they practiced those teachings by sharing meals together, by welcoming all people to a common table, they experienced in that at that table, a power that transcended any other human experience they had ever known. It was an experience around that table, something like the life-giving, creative, renewing power of the earth itself, something like the way nature turns water into wine. So when the early Christians tell a story about Jesus turning water into wine, it's really a story about what happens when the community comes together around that common table to lay aside human-made divisions and biases and fears and to love one another and to share what they have regardless of class or ethnicity or religion. When they did that, it was like being able to turn water into wine. Now, people don't often talk about this story together with the story of the feeding of the 5,000, which is another story from the Gospel of John, except in my Jesus action figure, where those two things are brought together for some reason. But I actually think they're very similar. Both stories tell of a situation where scarcity is perceived. we don't have enough. We have run out of wine at our wedding feast. How embarrassing, how sad. Or for the feeding of the 5,000, we have run out of bread to feed all of these people who have followed us into the wilderness. What are we going to do? There's not enough. But then in both stories, when the community comes together to share what they have, they find not only enough, but an abundance. To drive this point home, the Gospel of John has Jesus say, remember, Jesus, who is a symbol of the community coming together to transcend human-made limitations, Jesus saying, I am the bread of life. I am the true vine. That's not the historical figure talking. That is love manifest as communal sharing, saying, this is what life is all about. This is what truly nourishes us. And I know it's hard to think about it this way because we've been trained in hero worship. We've been trained to look for the messiahs who are going to save us. But John is saying there's something more going on here that requires the community to get involved. Today, as we do every day, we are going to symbolize what this idea of a common table around a communion table that has nothing on it. Talk about a miracle. Maybe the bread will appear. Maybe the water that's not there will become wine. We don't know. But the symbolism in John doesn't stop with the character of Jesus. Many scholars believe that the mother of Jesus in this story symbolizes Judaism. The mother of Jesus is not named in the Gospel of John, along with another important figure who's not named, who is called the beloved disciple. And it's thought that these two unnamed characters are sort of Judaism as Mary, and then the beloved disciple is the early church. And that's why we get the scene at the cross in John of Jesus saying to the beloved disciple, here is your mother. Take care. From Judaism comes the new Christian community. You all are connected. Take care of one another. So if you look at it that way, the mother of Jesus, or Judaism in our story, prompts Jesus or pushes Jesus into action. It emerges, the early Christian community emerges out of the values of Judaism. The stone jars that contain the water that become wine in this story, we're told that they were for the Jewish purification and cleansing rituals. They had about 120 to 180 gallons of water, this massive amount of purifying, cleansing water, an abundance of water for the purpose of moral purification. Now, there is nothing wrong with trying to live a life according to Jewish teachings, to believe that God has given certain basic moral laws and ways that we are supposed to interact as a community and standards we are supposed to follow. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with living a life in which we believe that if we fail to live perfectly by those standards, that there's other rules and rituals in place that help us demonstrate our penitence and help us start over again. The Jewish path is a beautiful path to a good life. But this story in John is a turning point on that path. It invites us to go in a different direction. In the story, the water of purification becomes the wine of transforming love. Not something that cleanses us on the outside, but something that changes us on the inside. It's an inner process similar to intoxication rather than an outer process of cleansing. So on one path, in Judaism, there is an abundance of God's grace as Jews seek to live a moral life. On the other path of Christianity, there is an abundance of this transforming inner love. And there is enough love to knock down every barrier that we place between each other. There's enough love to bring everybody we ever meet together around a common table, and everyone will have more than enough. This is not a story about Christianity being better than Judaism, which is something sometimes it's often read that way. This is a story about how Christianity is just a different path. It's a different way. It's the path of love changing us from within and love made manifest in community sharing. And then there's another level happening in this story. This is also a story about the difference between a scarcity mindset and an abundance mindset. And that layer of the story transcends religion entirely, because Judaism, for instance, can be based on an abundance mindset, or it can be based on a scarcity mindset. There can be an abundance of God's grace and faithfulness to the whole world, or there can be a scarcity of God's grace and faithfulness, though there's only enough just for the Jewish people. And Christianity can be based on abundance or scarcity. There can be an abundance of love manifest through sharing, so that everyone, regardless of who you are, has enough. All are welcome to come to a table and be fed and nourished and loved. Or Christians can have a scarcity mindset and act like there's not enough love for everyone. The table isn't big enough, and Christianity becomes an exclusive club. Right now in our country, those with the most power are absolutely possessed by a scarcity mindset. They believe there is not enough. They believe there are not enough resources in our country to share with everyone. So they arbitrarily draw imaginary lines, first along the borders, and say, if you're born on that side of the border, there's not enough for you. If you're born on this side of the border, maybe there's enough for you, but we've also drawn an arbitrary line around whiteness. And so if you are white, there is enough for you. And if you're not white, there is not enough for you. And by the way, this whole immigration crackdown is not about citizenship, it is about race. It's evidenced by the white South Africans who are being welcomed into our country. This has always been about whiteness. It's always been about racism. So there's not enough resources in our country, according to the scarcity mindset right now. And those in power also believe there's not enough energy in the world, when in reality, we have abundant energy from the sun, from the wind, from the earth, from the tides. But they say, no, there's not enough. There's a scarcity of energy. So we have to take control of other countries to steal their energy and steal their resources. The scarcity mindset has possessed those in power in the US as we colonize Venezuela and all of the other places that we've interfered. It takes place in Russia as they take over Ukraine. It takes place in Israel as they take over Gaza. It takes place in China as they want Taiwan and have their influence in Africa. Anywhere power is amassed and the scarcity mindset is taking place, there are people who want to control other places. From this belief of scarcity comes so many of the world's ills. The belief in scarcity produces racism, it produces fascism, it produces the twins of Christian nationalism and Zionism, it produces the Monroe Doctrine. Who in the world thought we'd be talking about the Monroe Doctrine in 2026? But this belief in scarcity is so powerful, it resurrects doctrines that were long dead. Belief in scarcity creates a colonizing mindset that we go into other countries and take control of their resources. It is the source of individualism and consumerism and imperialism and militarism. But we should not be fooled. The more the powerful have, the more scarcity they perceive. The very wealthy will never believe there is enough in their bank accounts. They will never have enough possessions. They will never have enough power. And they will use every resource at their disposal to turn us against one another and have us blaming each other because they don't have enough. But for that to work, they have to get us to believe the scarcity mindset as well. And they're doing a damn good job. This is absolutely the story of the big rich guy at the table with a big pile full of cookies telling the poor white person at the table that the poor brown person at the table is going to steal his cookie. And to our detriment as a species, we believe the big white guy all the time. The lie is powerful. The lie of scarcity is seductive. But there is a greater power than that lie. And it's the power described in our story today. It's the power of the earth herself, the power to turn the sun and the earth into food that we can eat, the power of the earth to cleanse herself and renew herself, the power of life to be born and to die and to be born again. It is the power to turn water into wine. And that power of Mother Earth exposes the lie of scarcity for its stupidity and for its insanity. The power of sharing with anyone around a common table makes impotent the lies of scarcity. The power of God's grace and faithfulness lets us start over no matter how many times we have believed the lie of scarcity. We don't have to believe it one more time. Whether Jews or Christians or Buddhists or atheists or whatever creed or color or ethnicity or nationality or gender or ability, the choice we face is between believing the lie of scarcity or believing in the power of abundance through sharing. Our choice is between believing the power of taking and hoarding for ourselves or the power of sharing around a common table. Our choice is between believing the lies told to us by the very wealthy and powerful or believing the truth we find in the gospel. We have the power being offered to us by the earth every single day. If we believe in abundance and share that abundance with everyone, we have the power to turn water into wine. Amen.